And so the first, I didn't bring you in with doing the bump or anything like that.
I know, that's pretty good.
Hey.
For the oldies, yeah. But goodies.
It only takes me about 2 years to get to get it right. Lynn Slonick was in the house.
That was very flattering. good morning.
How you doing?
Not too bad. I have a little cold, but... Hey, I can't complain.
Cold. You've seen one, you've seen them all.
Yeah, exactly.
So what's going on on the edumacation front?
Well, let's see. We've had a few things on our blog, actually, that I wanted to go back and recap. There was we had a great report from Carol Durham last week. It ran on Friday. There were two items there. Galen Joseph Hunter went out and recorded and reported for us. Carol Durham they have a new superintendent out there, and she's hit a couple bumps already. Poor woman. It's not an easy job. I keep telling people that. But there was an issue over a letter-writing campaign where the kids were being asked to write letters to the governor without parental or guardian permission. And she apologized for that, and they made amends on that one. But the second item was plans for a public forum on the Princeton plan, on the realignment of the elementary grades out there. That's still a pretty hot topic. I think that will continue pretty much through the spring. That meeting is scheduled for Thursday at 7 p.m. It's at the middle and high school over there. I think they were talking about doing it in the cafeteria because they wanted a space large enough to accommodate.
I will bet there will be a gajillion people there.
Yeah, and just to remind listeners, that issue has been linked now to passage of the budget for next year.
And just for those who are not up as to what is going on here,
yeah.
Because it took me a couple of weeks to to put all of this stuff in, explain the Princeton plan and why they want to do this over there and what it's the ripple effects on other districts.
Well, Carol Durham knew early on, back as far as last year, I believe, the end of last fiscal year, the school year ends June 30th. It runs July 1st to June 30th. They knew that they were going to be hitting a budget shortfall. It turned out to be $2.4 million, just a little bit more than Hudson's, actually. But they came up with, they were trying to come up with some ways that they could save money. And the issue came up of closing one of their elementary schools. They have one in Durham, and they have one in Caro. The school in Durham is much smaller, fewer families, fewer children. They did some work around some feasibility. I don't know whether they actually had an official feasibility study, but they ran through some different scenarios. They came up with three. One, of course, was to close one of the schools and fold everybody into one, and presumably that would have been closing Durham and coming to Caro. But they chose instead to leave both buildings open, but to reconfigure the grades. So under the plan, one school would house K-2, kindergarten through second grade, and the second school would hold 3 through 5. Three through five. And so, of course, then that presents issues because if you've got a first grader and you live in Caro, and they need to go to Durham, there are issues over transportation,
mm-hmm.
length of the school day. But more than anything, it seems to be that people were really, residents and parents were really put off by the lack of community engagement on the question. And the board made this decision, and it was one of those, this is what we're going to do, live with it, kind of. That's the way, people are feeling.
So they feel uninformed, and further to that, the implications are that down the line, as other school districts find themselves in the same position, these are the kind of things that are going to be happening.
Well, that's right. And this whole Princeton, it's called the Princeton Plan because it was first implemented in Princeton, New Jersey, back in the 1940s, and it was a way to desegregate the schools. Because when you're talking about children going to school in the neighborhoods where they live, when you have segregated housing, segregated neighborhoods, the schools are in essence, right. segregated. So this was an effort to redistribute the children around the district. So all K-2 kids would go into one school regardless of where they lived, and would force a mixing without a desegregation order, which is another way of doing it that became more the practice back in the 1960s. So that was, and there are positives. That's one of the positives that you could look at. But there are also issues around too many transitions for kids. Going from second to third grade is sort of a real key moment now, mm-hmm. especially in terms of standardized testing that's going on, because third grade is when they start doing the state level tests. So you have that gap. If you have two different principals, you don't have, unless you're really working from central administration and have a strong unifying vision and curriculum, there can be a break there. So kids who are most at risk, who tend to be, you know, children of color, children, lower income children, and I think, you know, young kids in general these days, that can be an abrupt and difficult transition.
I was wondering why they decided one first and second at one grade at mm-hmm. one school, and then third through six.
Yeah, that's the way it works in Hudson. Yeah, K-2 is at John L. Edwards, and then 3 through 6 is up at the intermediate school. Huh. Yeah,
you have third graders going to the same school that sixth graders are going to.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, although I think what they're talking about doing in Hudson is to move the sixth graders up to the junior high, which also has its pitfalls.
Yeah, but not quite as traumatic as a third grade.
Yeah, although they do work to keep them apart. They keep them separate. And when you're talking about here in Hudson, those are little kids, little size-wise, in a building that was built for teenagers, because that's the original high school in Hudson.
Yeah, wow.
So everything is proportioned much larger than in your normal elementary school. So,
oh boy,
there's a laundry list. So anyway, this meeting on the 7th, I think the plan is to bring some superintendents from other districts that have had experience with this configuration to speak to the limitations and the benefits for the public. So that is happening tomorrow at 7:00. So anyone who's interested,
tomorrow or Thursday?
Be aware.
Tomorrow or Thursday?
I'm sorry, Thursday.
Thursday.
Yeah, March 7th. I'm one day ahead.
Oh, I hope we have a recorder there.
Yeah.
So we can bring back some information on that.
Bring back some sound.
Because that's going to be going on for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and especially since it has been tied in some quarters to the budget vote, that will go on. That will be an intense conversation for the next couple of months.
To be continued.
Absolutely. And just a couple of quick things. It's on the blog today. Section 2, athletics of the New York State Public High School Athletic Association. They finally completed an audit. There's been discussion about some hinkiness with those books going back over several months. It was really a very tragic story. The gentleman who had been treasurer of that organization for 10 years committed suicide, and his suicide, he was being called in to present information for an audit, and he killed himself. Mm. And of course, then that turned the light on the situation even brighter. And they found $350,000 in various locations in different banks, and this was completely unknown, supposedly, to the leadership of the association. So now there was never any indication of wrongdoing. It was more like really, really sloppy bookkeeping. And now the audit has come out. And one of the things that I thought was very interesting, they really attributed this problem more to this Roger Seward, who was the late treasurer. He was in the job for 10 years. They had never filed a tax return
since 1978.
Well, that's just the thing. They blamed him for 10 years, but
where were they?
Exactly. The minutes of several of their meetings, this discussion came up about the finances, and that was attended by athletic directors, superintendents.
There's no way you can blame not filing taxes for in excess of 30 years on one person. Yeah. I don't care who it is.
Yeah, pretty wild.
What in the world?
Yeah, so I'm sure that will be a story that will continue.
As a matter of fact, looking at the story that Ms. Lyons wrote, Mr. Lyons, it's Brendan Lyons, mm-hmm. That he wrote. It seems to me that somebody outside might want to get involved in that, because that's crazy.
I know. I'm sure they will.
That's wild. When I saw the 78, I thought you had made a typo.
No, that was bizarre.
And so now everybody's going, oh, I didn't know about it.
That's right.
Oh, boy. That's right. So, love it.
And a couple of things locally, of course, everybody is familiar with the sequestration order that the president signed on Friday. We don't really know what that means yet, bottom line. But New York State School Boards Association did some calculations on the losses for schools based on that order. They're not huge numbers, but they're all the ones that I have seen so far. They're all under $100,000. But of course, in this time when you're cutting, anywhere from $25,000 to $50,000 could mean a teaching position.
Yeah, it's still a big chunk of money.
But in Columbia County, Hudson is the biggest loser. They'll probably lose at least $82,000.
Oh, man.
And these are the districts. Anyone who depends on federal funding, Title I, special ed, you have the high allocations in those areas and you're a high needs district, you're going to see a larger dollar loss.
And they'll start seeing these effects, late March, early April?
And if it stays in effect, definitely by July 1st. Yeah, special ed, I think, is the place where it's really going to slam.
Well,
those
why
programs.
Not take money from special ed?
Yeah, really,
I'm drooling with sarcasm this morning.
I know it's hard not to be sarcastic. And on the other side of the coin, I think Paul mentioned this yesterday. Hudson approved a memorandum of agreement with their building administrators, and amazingly enough, I have to say. And I'm not supposed to offer my opinion here, but they gave them raises, which, 2% effective retroactive to July 1st, 2012, and then 4% for the next 3 years. 4%. And just to give people some perspective on the amount, these are five people, essentially, in that unit. And combined, in 2012, their salaries amounted to about $500,000.
Holy smoke.
Yeah, and that's without benefits. So you add, an additional part on that on top of that. But, given the financial condition of the district and sort of what's happening in general, and the 4% is above what... is sort of the standard. I think 3% is considered high.
That's
these days.
A lot of money amongst five people.
It is a lot of money.
And what do they do?
Well, these are the building level administrators. So these are your principals.
Ah.
Let's see, and they're all at the high school, you have a principal and assistant principal.
But all right. So since I'm on a sarcastic roll here today, does that include the principal that doesn't work?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
Just
yeah.
wanted to know.
This is unit wide. Yeah.
Okay. I had to get that one in there.
But I hasten to add, though, they did give back a little bit on their health insurance and their dental and vision. They are now contributing 18%. For health insurance premiums, and 30% for vision and dental. So that is progress there. That cuts back.
All right.
and I think that is really, that's the most of it.
Oh, dear. And we're coming up on March and April, so we're The school board elections are coming up soon.
Right.
And the big drama, of course, is going to be the Cairo-Durham thing, of that meeting on Thursday.
So we'll, I think so. And all of these districts, to see how they fill up their gap.
Yeah. And, you know, folks, if you're out there in that area, especially the folks in that area, we'd love to know your opinions.
Absolutely.
You know, just come to us on our website and just tell us what you think of this.
Yeah.
Because this is an issue, I think we discussed it. It's from Cairo-Durham to someplace else to someplace else. This is going to happen unless everybody starts having babies. Some of these schools are going to be closing down.
Yeah, it's not to diminish what's happening in Cairo-Durham, right. But this is parallel to, you know, what's happening all over New York.
Exactly. Unless we pass a population order.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Thank you, Lynn Slonica. By the way, WGXE is definitely not responsible for my sarcasm during this segment.